Hey, Pittsburgh. Welcome to From the Newsroom, TribLive's podcast bringing you top stories straight from our newsroom. In this episode, we're looking at the aftermath of the high-stakes Pennsylvania District 12 contest between Democrats Bhavani Patel and Summer Lee. Ryan Dito joins me again to dissect the primary results and provide some insight into the profiles of these candidates. We'll discuss what may have decided this race and take a glimpse at what the general election contest could look like. I'm Zach Gibson, and this is From the Newsroom. Incumbent Summer Lee has defeated challenger Bhavani Patel to retain her seat as the Democratic nominee for the House of Representatives. Lee has held the seat since 2022 and will be running against GOP nominee James Hayes on November 5th. Political reporter Ryan Dito is here now to tell us about yesterday's race and what's coming next. Hello, Ryan.
Hey.
So tell me about what happened last night. Tell me about the race, when it was decided, and what happened after.
Yeah, it was a pretty early night. Summer Lee was able to win very decisively, I would say, in this contest, and kind of went down, I think, how some prognosticators thought that, you know, she kind of coasted to victory. She won by over 20 points, which is very significant. Last time she won by 1 point. So she really did expand her coalition.
Right. So just after the polls closed, AP called the race at just around 9:21.
Yeah.
Sometime after that, we saw that the percentage of the votes was a very substantial split. 61% of the votes were to Lee and 39% of the votes were to Patel. And early on, mail-in votes really made that lead.
Yeah. I mean, I think in Allegheny County, we count our mail-in votes very quickly. I think we're the fastest county in the state. They get tabulated right after the polls closed. And Lee was actually leading in those votes. And when normally she doesn't win the mail-in votes. Mail-in votes tend to be more traditional Democratic support. And this time, Lee was able to kind of build a base in that traditional Democratic Party. And that really paid off for her. I mean, honestly, when she won those votes, I thought that the race was over, and I was correct. So, she had a big switch from 2022 when she lost the mail-in votes by like 20 points and then was able to come back as the in-person votes, came in. This time around, she won the mail-in votes by 10%. That basically cinched the nomination right there. And that's why AP called it within 80 minutes of polls closing.
Right. Last week, we had a conversation previewing this primary. And one of the things that you told me was that in this race, it was seemingly two candidates that appeared to be a very similar style when it came to what types of reform or action that they would like to see done. The voters were deciding on was the package in which they wanted that to happen. Explain why Patel's package just didn't seem to be the winning package for voters.
Yeah, I think the fact that these candidates, by and large, agreed on mostly everything. When that happens, the incumbent is going to have an advantage. Why would you want to unseat somebody that has the same kind of, package? Like you said, it just doesn't make any sense if you're a voter. So, Lee really benefited from that. And so the race kind of came down to, we thought it was going to come down to the issue on the Israel-Hamas war. And Patel was really pushing that hard, saying that she is more supportive of, Israel, more supportive of Pittsburgh's Jewish community. And Lee, who was also supportive of our local Jewish community, but was also, advocated for a ceasefire and was more sympathetic toward the Palestinian cause, in that war. We thought that would kind of break everything down, that and who's the better Democrat was kind of the other issue. Those issues didn't stick. For Patel, I think voters decided that Lee was the better Democrat in this race. And I think on the Israel-Hamas war, it just the Lee's differences with the traditional Democratic establishment on that issue didn't hurt her at all. It didn't. You could argue that it helped her. Now, Pittsburgh's Jewish community, I think, was behind Patel, not by a large enough margin to really have a strong impact in this race. I mean, this race was decided by, I think Lee had what, how many more votes? Let me just double check. A decent amount more votes. 22,000. So that's not a close margin race.
Right. So after the race is called, Summer Lee addresses her party at the Renaissance Hotel downtown Pittsburgh. Can you tell me a little bit about what that was like?
Yeah, I mean, it was a celebration, obviously. People were hooting and hollering and winning. Summer has a very, very passionate base of, you know, volunteers and of supporters. Summer has won a lot of, she's been in a lot of contentious races now. She's won a lot of races by a decent amount of margin, but it always seems to attract a lot of attention. And so when she wins, it's always, she can be very passionate and sometimes defiant in her victory speeches. And I would say that this happened again. She was very passionate. She's very strong talking about her coalition building. She also mentioned, peace in Palestine. I think one of the lines she said was from peace from Pittsburgh to Palestine that like really got a lot of the crowd really fired up. So I think in a way that we all thought this race was going to hinge on this Israel-Palestine issue, I think Lee felt that way too. And so when she won, she was very like, it's okay for a representative from this district to be pro-Palestine. And she kind of repeated that over and over again. And I think that was a little bit of a defiance from her, which is kind of her MO in a good way.
Right. Right. As I read through your story earlier, I saw some quotes from Lee, like, where our movement is stronger than ever, also telling their supporters that we have rejected in this district that you can't be a bold progressive in Western Pennsylvania. All of these things echoing what you just said. And to check out more on this specific race, please go to Trib Live to read more of this and more of Ryan's coverage. But now let's take a little bit broader of a look at the Pennsylvania primary. What can you tell us about some of the highlights?
Yeah, I mean, other than this Lee race, it was fairly sleepy. Obviously we had our top two contests, our presidential primaries and our Senate primaries were already predetermined. The presidential candidates have already got enough delegates. They're going to be the nominees. You know, President Joe Biden's going to be the Democratic nominee. Former President Donald Trump's going to be the Republican nominee. They coasted. You know, they have both got over 80% of their electorate in those nominations. Senate races, there's only one candidate each. There's Senator Bob Casey for the Democrats and challenger David McCormick for the Republicans. So that was predetermined, and that went down exactly as we all thought it would. One of the surprises was on the Democratic side, nomination for state treasurer, Erin McClellan, won that race. She was largely outraised. Her challenger, Ryan Bizarro from Erie, he secured basically all of the Democratic nominations, all of the labor nominations, all the big things that you think Democrats will get to win the Democratic nomination. And McClellan defeated him pretty easily. That's probably the biggest surprise, I think, of the race. Other than that, kind of went the same way that we kind of expected.
Okay. Can you tell me some of the most compelling issues for voters in this race?
Oh, gosh. That's a tough one. I think it was it's hard to say there were a lot of compelling issues, I would say. Turnout was pretty low. I think in Allegheny County, it's at 26% right now. It'll go a little bit higher as the very final precincts are counted. They'll be counted on Friday. But I think the prediction was that it was going to be 35%. There's no way we're going to reach 35%. So it was even lower than predicted. So I think it was just kind of a just, I don't know. You had a lot of, no, I don't think there were a lot of compelling reasons, except maybe there was compelling reasons to support Summer Lee or support, you know, Bhavani Patel. But outside of that, it was pretty sleepy primary for a presidential race. I haven't checked the numbers yet, but we could be on a on the lower turnout compared to other presidential races in Pennsylvania for the primary.
Another thing that was a big part of the March debate between Patel and Lee was Patel calling out Lee for not denouncing protest votes or voting uncommitted. Was that something we saw a lot of through the primaries?
Yeah. The protest vote was sort of interesting. It wasn't as huge as we saw in other states. Minnesota, for example, had a big protest vote against President Biden around this uncommitted campaign, which is a kind of protest movement to push Biden to be more critical of Israel. And we had a similar effort in Pennsylvania, but it wasn't quite the same. You had to write in uncommitted. We don't know exactly how many of those are going to be actually written in uncommitted. The process in Pennsylvania, they don't count those unless the write-in vote has a chance to win the election. The write-in vote does not have a chance to win. So we're not going to get any kind of very specific results on that write-in campaign against Biden for weeks, months, if ever. But if we look at the whole numbers of write-ins, I think we're around like 58,000 against Biden, but Biden got 926,000 votes. So it's only about 5% of the electorate. There were more quote unquote protest votes against Biden for Dean Phillips, who was a presidential candidate from Minnesota. He dropped out, but he was already on the ballot. So he had to stay on the ballot. So, that's where we're at. I would guess from that uncommitted write-in vote, we're probably talking 40,000, maybe 42,000, 44,000 votes for there. That's okay, but it's definitely not as high as some predicted. There was also a significant protest vote against former President Donald Trump. Nikki Haley, who dropped out a while ago, but was also still on the ballot, she earned 156,000 votes. That's 16% of the primary. Trump had 788,000 votes. That's a decent amount of Republicans who didn't want to vote for Donald Trump in the primary. Now, we don't know how many of those were already going to be voting for Biden in the general election. There are a decent amount of Republicans who voted for Biden in the general election in 2022. But I would say that if you're looking at protest vote, a lot of the focus is on Biden's protest vote. You could argue that Trump's protest vote was higher, it was higher. So, that's definitely something to keep an eye on going into the general election. How are these protest votes gonna vote in the general election? Are Democrats going to stay home who don't think Biden does enough on Israel? Are Republicans going to stay home or vote for Biden because they don't like Trump? That's something we're definitely going to be looking at as we get closer to November.
Okay, you're breaking into my next question, which was, what are some of the main factors that these voters are going to be looking at and concerned about when heading into the November election, both with the PA-12 and with the presidential election?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to see where the approval rating jumps for these presidential candidates. They both have bad underwater approval ratings among Pennsylvanians. Are we going to see that movement towards one of them? If so, that would be very powerful for them to win Pennsylvania. And if you win Pennsylvania, there's a very good chance you win the presidential election. And so I think that's going to be a factor. I mean, it's really hard to say that abortion won't be a factor in the race. I think abortion will be a factor in the race. Again, the Biden campaign is going to criticize Trump for putting judges on the Supreme Court who overturned Roe v. Wade. And Trump has openly bragged about that. So I think that's going to be a factor. I think inflation will be a factor. Does inflation stay at its levels now? Are people still upset over the higher levels we had last year to kind of say, no, we need a change in the White House? So, you know, those are big things. But I think generally it's just going to come down to, you know, demeanor. Like, are people going to be confident in President Biden going into the election? Are people going to give former President Trump another chance? I don't know. I will say that I believe this race will be close in Pennsylvania. It was very close last time. It will probably be close again.
Okay. So in November, Summerlee is going up against James Hayes. What is the outlook for the results of that race in the general election?
This is a safe Democratic district. If you by the, you know, the prognosticators, that's how they grade, you know, the district. So Summerlee is overwhelming favorite to retain this seat. It's very, very hard for a Republican to convince enough Democratic voters to basically not vote for a Democrat. There are many more Democrats in this district than there are Republicans, because it's centered around the city of Pittsburgh and its immediate suburbs, which are very Democratic. And so I would say that Summerlee has a very, very, very strong chance of retaining this seat. It depends on, I don't think the Republicans will invest in this race. James Hayes, it seems like a pretty good, you know, candidate for them. But at the same time, if they don't have outside investment, it's really, really, really hard to flip a district. That outside investment is probably going to actually be focused on Pennsylvania's 17th district, which is also a Pittsburgh area district that includes the Pittsburgh suburbs and the North Hills, some of the western Allegheny County and Beaver County. That is going to be a toss-up kind of race, or maybe leans towards the Democrat a little bit, but a much closer race than the 12th district.
Okay, Ryan, thank you again for joining me.
Of course, thanks for having me.
More in political news, the Senate pushes through $95 billion in war aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, sparking debate over the U.S.'s role in foreign conflicts. In a bold move, the package also includes a plan to push TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, to sell, risking legal battles and impacting content creators' livelihoods. President Biden said he'd sign the bill Wednesday. For these and more top stories, visit triblive.com. Once again, I'm Zach Gibson, and this is From the Newsroom.